Hi, everyone. This is Gary welcoming you to LL Research radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, September 16th, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Austin and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website, llresearch.org, and the community website, bringforth.org. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Gary, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. How is everybody today?
Ready.
Swell, bordering on ecstatic.
Fantastic. I'll ride your wave. Our opening riff comes from September 16th to, that would be today, and the opening riff did not come from today.
Oops.
Comes from May 16, 12 years ago, in 2002. Kuo says, your consciousness is one atom of an inorganic organism, which is the infinite creator, so that you are the sun within your own constellation of being, and are the center of your world, and yet, at the same time, every other soul is also a sun. And so, those near to you are as the galaxy, and you dance as stars dance, rotating about each other and swimming in a sea of infinite possibilities.
Thank you very much, Gary. I remember a fellow named Dan. He was a funny little guy. He had marks, tattoos over half of his body, a lot of those blue wavy marks, and then the pictures in between the wavy marks, or rather the other way around. And he liked nothing better than to take off his shirt and show off his, he had no skin left that was not covered in that part of his body. After I saw them the first time, I discouraged his doing that again because of the fact that he was not a pretty man, being short and stout and overly pleased with himself. Remember, Jim?
I do.
Yeah. He said in his last illness in a letter to me, that he had seen the Creator and that it had no organism. It was not an organism. And he found that very frightening. He said he did not want to die. I do not find it frightening because I know that a being that is infinite and eternal could not be an organism. Organisms are born, they live, they die. So the whole living and dying thing is an illusion. It's an illusion of a high order, and we are a subject for an infinite number of years. I have no idea how long it takes us to work up through first density, being rocks and being wind and being all of those basic elements, then being various animals and trees, flowers, I hope. Butterflies, all of those things, and then finally graduating into third density and being humans. And we know that unless we've wandered into this incarnation from elsewhere for a long time, I expect I have, wanderer or no, and I would say I am a wanderer type A, that is, I've been here a long time. I've probably been here throughout recorded history a long time. Merciful goodness. it almost makes you weary to contemplate it. Experiencing this high-level illusion of life from the state of chemical bodies, chemically run bodies, to the state of experiencing electrically operated vehicles. But always with one single essence. That is an easy essence to find. Contemplation helps greatly. Being in love and other experiences of like intensity bring you to the awareness of love being you. But for the most part, we day by day find it less than simple to experience being that we are, that love that we are, as we shift through various emotional states, none of which open up to us that wonderful experience of simple joy and happiness that being in love does, and that other ways do too, but I'm talking about the general run of human life. For the most part, we need to develop G, whereby we are able to view ourselves with proper stance, with that seeing of ourselves as essence, seeing of ourselves as the butterfly's wings as they float past, something beautiful, something lovely. This is who we are. How do we find it? What is our method? Ra suggested that the key to all of our higher experiences is silence. Can't be that simple. No, no, it can't be. Yet it is. If we can, on a day-by-day basis, find some time to enter the silence, we can find that love, that essence of love. Perhaps not right at first. We're dealing with all of the ways that our body doesn't want us to be silent. It wants us to be thinking about something or doing something. You can't blame your body for that. You've been doing something or thinking about something all your life. That is what you have been taught to do. That is what you have been praised for doing by those you respect and admire. How often has anyone complimented you for sitting in silence? Certainly not in my case. To the opposite, I remember my mother exploding frustration and telling me to either do something or get out of the room because she couldn't stand me just sitting there. My beloved Don Elkins would have cheered at my just sitting there, but he wasn't around then. We have to be our own peanut gallery here. We have to cheer ourselves on and create the habit of finding within ourselves that essence of stars. We are stars, and the people around us are stars. How beautiful is that? The Ra was trying hard to find some way of conveying to us the way we link with others. There is no need from star to star. There is only the simple laws of attraction. And yet all of the stars are needed desperately by the others. Only when all of the stars are accounted for that the universe comes into balance. We are all vitally important. And it is well for us to find that point of view, to pull back, so that first we are looking at the ground around us, and then we are looking at all of the trees and rivers and lakes, immediate vicinity from a distance up in the sky. And then we pull back more and we're able to see the shape of the globe beneath us. And then we pull back more and we can see the whole earth as an orb whirling in its dance. And then we pull back more and see the whole of the planets and constellations, moons, and all these things that make up a constellation or a galaxy or a universe. The further we can pull our attention back, the more clearly we will be able to see the relative importance of those things that face us day by day. The more simply we will be able to evaluate what actions we should take up and what we should drop, what we should hug to us and what we should leave behind. Get away from that first round of impulsivity, pulling back until we can see a wider point of view. And we can see how beyond impulse, believe in yourselves, my friends, as spiritual beings. Never doubt that. You are a spirit, and your essence is love. You are when you rejoice and give thanks. May you enter the silence with me today and experience.
Amen. Thank you, Carla, for the love and the light in your thoughts and the silence in your thoughts as well. Our first question comes from Jeremy, who has asked via Bring Forth, what is the difference between acceptance and enabling according to Confederation entities?
I found that a very interesting question, because at the start of it, there's no difference. That which you, intimation, enable. So the difference would come only in whether or not your acceptance involves actual being with the enabling, willing the enabling to happen, wishing it to happen. The Ra group used the description of the bull charging you as something that Don actually asked him, if the bull is chasing you, then would my right, you know, reaction, the only right reaction be that of love? And the Ra said, well, the first reaction would be that of running to climb the fence to get it between you and the bull, and then you could love the bull from the other side of the fence, which I think very aptly describes the difference between acceptance and something. Yes, the bull is chasing after me, and enabling the bull to catch you on the wrong side of the fence. No, you don't want to do that. So there's a process of evaluation in which you take responsibility for that which you see before you. Yes, you accept that it's happening, but do you want to help it to happen? If the answer is no, then that's where the difference comes in. Guys, have at it.
Keyword search for the word enabling on the in the QO database, the consciously channeled transcript library, and couldn't find them addressing that particular concept. So, in response to what I think enabling is that it's helping someone to avoid the consequences of their actions. Helping someone to persist in a negative, destructive, or dysfunctional behavior, and as a result, the person engaging in that negative behavior is, and now this is Wikipedia's definition, shielded from awareness of the harm it may do and the need or pressure to change. Enabling in this sense is a major environmental cause of addiction. Wikipedia goes on to say, a common example of enabling can be observed in the relationship between the alcohol addict and a codependent spouse. The spouse may attempt to shield the addict from the negative consequences of their behavior by calling in sick to work for them, making excuses that prevent others from holding them accountable, and generally cleaning up the mess that occurs in the wake of their impaired judgment. In reality, what the spouse is doing may be hurting, not helping. Enabling can tend to prevent psychological growth in the person being enabled and can continue to contribute to negative symptoms in an enabler. So back to Jeremy's question, my take on Jeremy's question, that is, what is the difference between acceptance and enabling? I surmise that enabling, though often stemming from feelings of guilt, insecurity, or codependency, has love and acceptance at its core. There's a desire to help the other person. But I see that it may be a misguided love and acceptance, a love that is unrelieved by wisdom. It's a love that wants to take responsibility for another's decisions or coddle them or help them to stay in a less than fully empowered, responsible state of being. Whereas the same acceptance illuminated with wisdom may see the value in supporting the other self's actual path by getting out of the way. With wisdom, that love may see that we are here to grow and to learn, and the act of enabling may only stymie or hamper that growth. So I see this balance of love with wisdom as if the self was saying, I will love you, I will accept you, and I will offer my hand in service if I can genuinely be of service, but I will not continue to feed and enable your negative pattern. I will not make excuses for you. I will not shield you from the natural consequences of your own actions. I will not continue to provide the means, like money, whereby you continue your patterns. And it's a careful balance to strike there, because there's nothing harsh or punitive, or shouldn't be anything harsh or punitive in that standpoint. It doesn't mean that you impose negative consequences upon the other self or engineer a situation so that the other self can experience a manufactured negative outcome. Rather, you simply stop feeding and enabling the pattern in order to allow the person to actually experience the results or the fruits of their actions. And I'll make a final note that pulling back from what you consider enabling could be kind of, you have to be careful that you're not being callous. For instance, I think of Carla and Don's relationship. And in that Don, in order to have a relationship with him, from what I understand, you had to meet him where he was. You couldn't say, Don, you need to change this or do this differently. And Carla especially did that a lot. She said, okay, I'm going to set aside my needs and find ways to fit into his world because I can see his limitations and I can see how I can love him. And she didn't say, I'm not going to enable him and I'm going to pull back. So it's a very, very delicate situation to choose between the two and even determine whether or not you're enabling. But in the case of an addict, that's pretty egregious and blatant. That's it for me.
I think it's a really good question. I think both of those are really good answers, too. But it seems like a question that we are kind of here to figure out. Like, what does it mean to accept? What does it mean to love somebody? How are we able to be compassionate? I think enabling, like Gary said, is sort of a naive sense of compassion, unrelieved by wisdom. I've heard it called blind love or idiot love, which is kind of a mean term, but it's kind of true. When you love so much that you do something that's inevitably less helpful for the person you're loving and for your relationship with that person and maybe for you, like if, as Gary was talking about, an addict, if you love an addict so much that you don't want to see them go through any kind of withdrawal, you don't want to see them struggle through recovery, and so you enable their addiction to make them comfortable, that's obviously enabling and might not be the most compassionate thing to do, even though in the moment you feel like you're being compassionate when you do it. So I don't think it's an easy thing. I think all situations are unique, and Ross said that it may take many, many essays into compassion before true universal love is the product of the attempted opening and crystallization of this all-important Springboard Energy Center. That's the Green Ray Energy Center. So Ra's saying that, you know, compassion isn't just a given. We don't automatically know how to do it once we open the Green Ray Energy Center. We can make mistakes. We can accidentally hurt people trying to share our love. There's a lot of interesting catalysts to work with here to figure out exactly what acceptance is and the best way to do it.
Since we don't know what the Confederation, enabling is a psychological term that's used these days, and the enabling affects the people involved. And I think the acceptance that the Confederation offers does not attempt to affect any behavior. It simply accepts however the person or people or situation is. So there might be a difference there in the acceptance would not involve affecting the behavior and the enabling would. And I would think the Confederation probably would not do that. But again, it's just a guess because we don't know.
One of you guys gives a response that I just want to ruminate on. And Jim's was definitely at that level.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not always too quick on my feet. So I'll have to let that go.
No, go right ahead, please.
It seems like there's definitely something really solid to chew on there that Jim just offered. And like ideas of control come to mind and how, like Jim said, affecting behavior, like the enabler may be seeking to kind of control, if not the behavior, then the situation or the consequences on some level. Whereas acceptance, per Jim's description, is more of a surrender to an allowance, a pulling back, not trying to alter an outcome, but just loving the person as they are, even if that person is going to experience a negative outcome due to the result of their own free will. So it's a great thought. Thanks for that, Jim.
Yeah, good thought.
I think everybody made a really good effort.
In my experience with Don, for instance, as Gary said, I looked at Don's willingness to be with me at all as enormous because I felt that I understood him well enough to know that this was the limit of which he was capable, that anything else would eventually kill his spirit, even though he might want, say, for instance, to get married because I wanted it and he loved me. And I knew that. I could see that. But I did carefully and persistently and with great success ask for what I needed. And it wasn't a bargaining thing. It was a look, this is something I need. And then we would talk. And then he dearly, sweetly try. I remember I told him, I said, when I cry, you need to comfort me. And he said, how do I comfort you? And I said, well, you pat me on the back and you say comforting word. Question with Don. Don did not hug. he sat there and he put his hand on my back, pat, pat, pat. And he spoke comforting words as follows. You were living on the side of a round ball, pat, 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 pat. The ball is rotating in space, pat, pat, pat. Near the edge of a tiny galaxy, pat, 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 pat. And you're sticking straight up out of this ball, pat, pat, pat. Going on to talk about my situation, sort of pulling back, you know, really pulling back. And to look at me, you know, as a human being. And oddly enough, it comforted me. Perhaps because it was what he had. He was giving the best of his effort to it. He was beautifully, fully giving all he had of the relationship that we had. I became the tether that held him to the ground. I went into town to do business because he got a headache when he got within 15 minutes of downtown Louisville. And it just got worse and worse when he continued until by the time he finished business in downtown Louisville, he had to go home and lie down with a sick headache. And he might be a couple of days getting over it. He was a tough guy. He was a guy that was big into guns and protection and always being very carefully defended. He was one of those idiots that had a house gun and a car gun and a gun in every room. I mean, the guy was, you know, a tough guy. On the other hand, he was one of the most, he was probably the most sensitive soul I've ever known. And very breakable, very fragile. So moving on my understanding of the situation, I carefully negotiated how we could both live and live together because that's both what we wanted. I never had to worry about does he love me or not. If he didn't, he'd be gone. That was never a question because he was a very simple guy and he'd be gone with the wind if he didn't have the absolute necessity of being with me. He was driven by forces beyond his control. I felt sorry for him because he had fallen for me and needed to be with me because it did not bring him a great deal of happiness in a way. And at the same time, I was his only source of happiness. And I have never been more loved. So there were gifts that he gave me that no one could possibly have given because they were the gifts of silence. Do you know anyone else in your life that would never criticize you but would also praise you? You're on your own with Don. He wasn't going to tell you when you cooked a good meal or when you'd done something that he appreciated. On the other hand, I could feel it. I could feel his appreciation. I could feel his appreciation. And certainly, if there was an addiction, it was an addiction to silence, something that I approved of. And so we had a relationship based wholly on silence, very metaphysical, not at all physical. And yet when I wanted to be physical, I told him so. And he simply gave me permission to do so, not with him, but with someone of my choice. Thing that runs that deep, that he is able to say, please have a ball. When someone else would say, you can't do that, that would just kill me. I find that remarkable. And yet that happened. So when you're looking at enablement, you have to figure out what it is that you're enabling. And if it's something of which you approve, then that's a good thing. I always heard from people that we were codependent, and I read books on it just to check it out. That wasn't our situation. But what our situation was would be very difficult to describe. I think that the process of pondering what is a person addicted to, is it all right that it has reached the level beyond preference and has become something that cannot be lived without? Is that all right? Or is that something that should not be encouraged? And in complicated people, this question, which aids them both, then I think that accusations of enablement can be laid aside. I think it's when, as Gary said, the enabling process means that another person is brought mind, body, or spirit, that the enabling becomes toxic. It really takes a good deal of thought to part the confusion and to determine that one thing is that which you see and that which is true, thing you can get behind, or is it something which you wish to avoid or fight? And then I think you need to follow it up with true action.
Well spoken, Carla. Complicated is a great word to apply to humans and to the situations that result between us. We are complicated beings. And what you described of your situation can be applied to many seekers' lives. I mean, you outlined a situation between two human beings where there were very fine balances happening. I mean, you had this compassion for Don, but it wasn't blind compassion. It wasn't blanket compassion. It was compassion and a love that derived from a knowledge about who Don was and what he thought. It was a true knowing of Don, and there was that knowing with that compassion that blended to form your particular balance. And like you said, you each were better because of the balance you struck with one another. You each offered each other mutual service and mutual ability to serve others. So I think that situation alone is ripe for mining in the consideration of this question. So does anybody else have any further thoughts to offer that question?
Nope.
All righty then. So our next question comes from Third Density Being via Bring Forth. That's his username on Bring Forth. We've had some conversation with him. He's actually a Polish seeker. He writes, I'm thinking lately a lot about what catalyst is, and I have one question in that regard. In case of catalyst, which induces strong negative impulses in emotional sphere, when one is engaging quite fixed and lee upon circumstances, like necessity of regular presence in some place which, quote, contains negative catalyst, how one should proceed when the desire is to use such catalyst in full? Should I endure such situations and let negativity flow through me while perfecting self-control? I'm sure avoidance is not a good choice and only prolongs repetitiveness of this unwanted catalyst. But I do not know how I can, quote, transform this impulse of negativity into something different, preferably into a positive impulse or simply to discharge it. I guess my question is generally how to proceed with negative catalysts when one cannot be avoided. Well, I can take a first go unless anybody else.
Go for it.
All right. So I have a handful of thoughts. One is that describing catalyst as negative, is the negative part what's happening outside of the self, such as like crime in the neighborhood, an unjust government, a barking dog, etc.? Or is negative referring to the inner experience, that is the feeling that results in response to the environmental input? In either event, it sounds like negative kind of undesirable. So I think there's two levels, so to speak, that the work can be done, in concept at least. On the inner level, you know the experience, you observe the patterns, you watch the reactions, you analyze and you ask, where is this coming from? You apply balancing exercises, and you set your intention and exercise your will and faith to accept and love your inner experience however you may feel, whether that seems negative or positive. And I'm a firm believer that whatever the outer circumstance is, you can, through disciplined and diligent inner work, create a presence and a spaciousness within that is able to be a spring of peace and love and light. And I also feel that changing the inner picture necessarily reflects or even changes the outer picture. Maybe the circumstances don't change themselves, but you relate to them differently, and you don't resist them, and you see through what seems like a difficult outer picture to the one creator behind it, and you see that you are one with the outer picture. My final idea is that in either event, the work is to accept both the inner and the outer situation. But does that mean that you necessarily need to persist in what feels like a negative circumstance to you? Everyone, of course, has to answer that question for themselves, but personally I think it's okay to remove oneself from a troubling circumstance. You have to be sensitive to your own needs, and you may have something to learn from the situation that's important to you, and for that reason, needs requires that you should stay in that situation. But conversely, you may be unnecessarily compromising the health of your system to be staying. I've seen this before where individuals who are aware of the mechanics of spiritual evolution sometimes get into the trap of feeling that if they walk away from one negative circumstance, they will just be avoiding a lesson and forced to learn it all over again in another guise down the road. And I suppose that's possible, but the idea of having to repeat a lesson which is avoided shouldn't bind one to a circumstance, in my opinion, at least, which is why it's critical to listen to and trust your innermost self, and I think that's most affected by disciplined daily meditation. What would you guys think?
Well, I thought that was a very good response, actually.
Oh, thank you.
Not to flatter, but simply to note that I respect that answer, especially the conclusion that the ring around is so much better to contemplate the situation and see, well, what is the true situation and what can I, in all honesty, do? I remember a time, I think that I've talked about it before, where I had a horrible boss, and I really needed to stay in that job for a year. It was my first professional position, and you don't leave professional positions before your first year. And then you have to give a couple months' notice so you can train a replacement. Stretched out before me, ghastly, plane of difficulty. And so I decided that I was going to act as if I loved my boss. And I changed myself. Within 2 weeks, the effort to love, the will to love, the acting as if I loved, had brought me enough understanding of her situation in life that I honestly felt sorry for her and felt the desire to help her and comfort her and ease her difficult situations. Talk about, she was very, very lonely. She was elderly. She was a spinster. She had no one. Everybody in her personal life had died. And all she had was her job. And she'd never had an assistant before and didn't know how to act. And it wasn't my place to be teaching her how to treat an assistant. So I just loved her. And I acted as if I loved her. I grinned at her. I cracked jokes. I told her that I liked her brooch, you know, or her earrings. And she became very fond of me very quickly. 2 weeks, believe it or not, the situation began to change. Now, there are some situations that you cannot change. There are some people that are intractable. There are some relationships that are intractable. If you have a child who grows up to be someone you honestly don't like, you can certainly act as if you liked her or him. You can support her. You can explore the boundaries of your ability to understand why it is that you simply don't like her. But you can't make yourself like someone that you can hope for is to accept. And to focus on something else, to cast your eyesight along to other parts of the job. The marriage, the family, so that this does not overwhelm you, and only remains a burr on under the saddle, or a difficulty that can be endured, can be tolerated. I think toleration is a wonderful word. So many times, the most we can do is come to a state of tolerance. That is, honestly, the most we can do. Then that's a good thing. It's just important not to let the tolerance become toxic. Not to pat oneself on the back or to point out to others how understanding you're being, things like that, can poison a genuine toleration and make it impossible to be positive. You're looking for ways to love. That's the thing. There is always something, some way, some aspect of a situation where you can express your love. If you simply not only fulfill the responsibility, but go as far as you can over the top to do better than that, to be excellent. You retrieve your self-respect, be an honorable person, to keep your promises, to be loyal, to do what you say you will. And if this causes difficulty within you, then so be it. It does not keep you from being responsible for keeping your promises, for being loyal, for being a person, that stands up, that steps up to the plate, that, as Spike Lee would put it, does the right thing. Stand on your two feet and be dignified and honorable. Keep your promises and keep them with love. And there isn't much better that you can do. I wish I knew what this person's problem was. I feel sure that if we'd shoot it through, we could find a place where he could express his love and be a person of love in that situation, radiating to others the love and light of the one creator. Anybody else? Mickey, what do you think?
Well, if you define negative catalyst as that which you don't like and positive catalyst as that which you like, which is usually the case, then I think we've got three choices. And Gary introduced one possibility of avoiding it by simply removing yourself from the situation if it's overwhelming and you really feel like it's detrimental to your overall well-being to remain there. And Gary also mentioned the possibility of balancing, as we use all catalysts, and finding a balance by working on it consciously in meditation. And the third possibility, Carly, you mentioned, is an act of will to just transform the situation by the way you're looking at it and taking an active part in making it positive. So it looks like those are the three possibilities. I don't think there are any more. Austin, do you know? Got number four right over there?
Nope. I have a response. I had typed out a response earlier, and it's basically a reiteration of most of what you have all said. So I'll go through and see if it ties some things together. I think it's easy for us to perceive many types of catalysts as negative, especially if they're evoking some kind of biological reaction within us, which produces a heightened state of emotion like fear or anger, some sort of denial or projection. These can be things that our brain offers to us biologically, and we choose how to deal with that, what our brain offers us. But it gives us this negative reaction, which I think is what third density being is talking about. So he asks, should I endure such situations and let negativity flow through me while perfecting self-control? And I wanted to quickly touch on the idea that Ra says that the service to self path is one of control and the service to others path is one of acceptance. So we have to be careful in suggesting something like perfecting self-control, making sure that you understand the nuances of control versus acceptance. But if you allow the emotion to run through you and you observe it and you try to keep yourself from acting upon negative desires, like lashing out or shouting or causing a big scene, or whatever it is that these negative emotions are causing you to feel, doing something like that would probably just make the situation worse. But Ra does say that the repression of emotions depolarizes the entity insofar as it then chooses not to use catalytic action of the space-time present in a spontaneous manner, thus dimming the energy centers. There is, however, some polarization towards the positive if the cause of this repression is consideration for other selves. So if you're experiencing something negative in catalyst and you really want to lash out, but you choose not to, Ra does say that that is positively polarizing if you do it out of consideration for the other people in the situation. Ra also discusses a point at which working with catalyst and emotions will allow us to observe them without expressing a reaction, and that's still working with the catalyst. It's still imbalanced, and you still have balancing to do if you're able to just observe it without acting upon it. So he asks how to transform the impulse of negativity into something different, and I think that's sort of what you guys have been talking about with the balancing exercise. contemplating the situation, trying to figure out the ins and outs of it, and just changing your perspective, because Ross says that's essentially what dealing with catalyst is interpreting catalyst. Positive entities interpret catalyst positively, and negative entities interpret it negatively, even if they initially seem negative at first. So a positive entity is more likely to perceive a catalyst as negative, but they will interpret it and work with it until they see it as positive and can use it as positive catalyst. And I think that is pretty much it. The rest is just a reiteration of what all you guys had said.
One empowering idea, and it's present in all of our responses, is that this catalyst can be used. So if you're experiencing something, then it's there for your use, it's there for your growth, and it's right for you at the time. And I think that falls under the umbrella of faith, of you looking at your life circumstance, however it may be at the moment, without an eye towards resistance, but rather embracing it and seeing, if I am experiencing this, it is because it is exactly right for me, and then asking yourself, how can I use this? How can I relate to this? And then taking that question into meditation. And I think that creates an empowerment. You become less of a victim or a bystander of whatever may be happening in your life, and you instead empower yourself to actually make use of it and process it. So we are. Does anybody have any further responses to those questions?
No.
I had one point I forgot to talk about really, really quickly. If you work with this negative emotion and you meditate on it and it just doesn't seem to go away, which sometimes that happens and doesn't seem like you can transform it, that's when you might want to start turning over stones in other parts of your life, doing dream work. Because in projection and in denial, these things can hide from us very trickily.
Mm.
And I don't know if that's a word.
Handily.
And even if we meditate on it and bring it up within us and accept it, it can still come back. And if you find what you're doing is not working, maybe doing shadow work in other parts of your life, especially dream interpretation, your unconscious will probably be giving you clues through your dreams. And once you start looking in other parts of your life, maybe you'll realize that there are some dots that connect to this other negative aspect.
Well, before I turn it over to Carla to say goodbye to everybody, we just wanted to start telling you about our homecoming event in August 2015. We're just going to start a year in advance and talk about it every week. I am just kidding. Carla, if you would like to say goodbye to our listeners.
I certainly would. Homecoming, by the way, was perfectly wonderful. We didn't lie. The golden dome of love over the place must have reached to the stars. It was wonderful to be here. Jim's gardens were glowing, and the people were glowing, and we danced the wonderful dance of homecoming together. Somehow it always adds up to that situation, that wonderful, I don't know how it happens, but it just comes together in a great glow of positivity, and I'm so grateful. And to say goodbye to you folks, please send us your questions. We value them so much. And if there's anything that we can do for you, if there's anything we can do better, let us know. Meanwhile, please know that we love you, every one of you, so much. You'll never know how much. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. So much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions this week, which includes Jeremy and Third Density Being. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at Blog Talk Radio LL Research. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk with you then.
I lay alone in Island Coast, and only those I see. bright red summer. Search all day and never find anyone. Planets turn and they